I mean, I'm happy about this. You know, hopefully it'll go, more companies will pick it up sooner rather than later. And people will start, more people will start reaping the benefits. I mean, this is a small step, but a great step.
Indeed. Indeed.
Thanks for listening to Noise Filter, your public health podcast.
Be sure to subscribe to the Noise Filter podcast, follow us on social media, and leave us a review letting us know your favorite part of the show.
You can find me, Hope Hickerson, at hopehickerson.com.
And you can find me at Dr. Mark Allen Derry or at The Dr. Derry. That's D-R-D-E-R-Y.
To see and share our amazing animations and find out more information about us, the show, as well as links to our social media, go to noisefiltershow.com.
We are grateful to our sponsors, including Access Health Louisiana and the End the Epidemic Initiative, who are working to bring equitable health outcomes to everyone they serve. Hope, any last words?
Stay well out there, folks, and continue taking steps to keep yourself and your loved ones healthy. That includes exercise, a good diet, getting adequate sleep, and seeing your healthcare providers regularly.
And protect yourself and others by getting the COVID-19 vaccine and booster, wearing a mask, and social distancing wherever possible. Remember, health is a human right.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
There's something missing and I'm lit and I got something to say. Oh yeah. All of the witches and the demons better get out my way.
Good evening, you're listening to Transpositive here on KBOO Portland. Before we start our show, I want to remind you that today's a great time to become a member of KBOO. Show your support for Transpositive and for KBOO by becoming a member of KBOO today. Just go to kboo.fm/give. Help us meet our $15,000 goal. We're community funded, so we need your support to get there. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Thank you.
Good evening and welcome to Transpositive. Tonight we're interviewing Sienna Christie and talking about their new song, Northern Lights. So let's go around and introduce ourselves. I'm Nicolette and I use AM or they, them pronouns.
My name is Emma. I use she and her pronouns.
Hi, I'm Sienna Christie. I use she and they pronouns.
Great. So, Sienna, can you start by introducing yourself and telling us a little about yourself?
Absolutely. Thank you so much. My name is Sienna, as I said. I live in Vancouver, Washington. I'm originally from both Portland and Los Angeles, and I've been singing songs and writing songs since I was 6 years old. And so, I am really excited about my newest song release, which is called Northern Lights, which was released about a week ago on March 3rd.
Great. So I just wanted to ask, because you said you use she, they pronouns, do you identify as trans or non-binary or anything outside of cis?
I am questioning. I currently identify as cisgender, but I am definitely questioning.
Makes sense. Totally valid. So what's your musical background like and what inspired you to become a musician?
Ooh, thank you for asking. I began singing as soon as I knew how to open my mouth. My mom sang me a lot of songs growing up. My dad is a singer-songwriter as well, so I definitely grew up around a lot of music. And one thing I really loved was that they encouraged me to be a musician in all kinds of ways and didn't set any limits or barriers on what kind of a musician I could be. I did encounter barriers in other areas, but they didn't come from my parents. I learned to play piano when I was 9 years old, that's a skill that I've tried to retain into adulthood. And when the pandemic hit, I was really excited to start playing shows for the first time. I was ready to finally become a singer-songwriter in the local area. And then, of course, COVID happened, as it did to many musicians. But I luckily was able to find a silver lining and got myself a guitar and learned to play guitar. So I've been playing guitar also since late 2019, early 2020. So a lot of different things have led me to music. And I know that to this day, I still write whenever there's something, there's some truth that I discover that I more or less want to share with the world, or something that it's often a way of trying to show compassion and honesty to myself and others. So music is everything to me.
That's great, and I totally relate. I also think it's really cool that, you know, you sing, you play piano, you play guitar. That's three instruments. Like, I just sing and barely play piano, not very well. So props to you. So what kind of music do you make, and what inspires your music?
I tend to think of myself as a country folk singer-songwriter. Although it's funny, because growing up, a lot of people said they thought my songs sounded like Broadway songs. They also said they sounded like songs that come at the most important moment in a Disney movie. And I often get told that I sound like a Disney princess. Lately, I've gotten compared to Elsa a lot, which, you know what? I will take it. I think Elsa has a great voice. I think Idina Menzel is wonderful. I think these days what I write is sort of more country folk focused, but my training and my kind of background in lots of different kinds of music hopefully shows through. In terms of what inspires me, I mean, a lot of things. I have trouble separating my pain from other people's, and I have trouble separating other people's pain from mine. And sometimes that's gotten me into trouble, but when it comes to music, I think it's been a way for me to come up with inspirations and to try to write songs out of a place of compassion and empathy. To manage the feelings so they don't just eat me from the inside out.
Yeah, I completely relate to that as a musician who also uses music to process my emotions. So the reason we really wanted to have you on the show tonight is because of your new song, Northern Lights, which we'll be playing later. Can you tell us about this song and what inspired you to write it?
Absolutely. Northern Lights is a song about my partner, whose name is Rhea, and we have been together for 11 years total. We met when we were both 18 years old. She's from Michigan, and we actually met in the Midwest. We were both studying music, I knew from the moment I met her that she was just a wonderful human, and I could tell that she seemed to be hiding her true self from most of the world, but I was lucky. She, for some reason, she wasn't afraid to show who she really was to me. And eventually it came to a point where I said, listen, I love that you open up to me and you're vulnerable and you're open and honest with me, but if I'm gonna stay with you, I want you to be that way with everyone in the world, and I want you to figure out why that's so hard for you. And she said, you know, I would like to do that too. I wish it were as easy as saying it is. And so she kind of has been in the past few years has been doing a lot of self-exploration, a lot of identifying her priorities, identifying her sense of purpose and how she makes meaning through living. And the biggest discovery she's had in the last year or so has been that she is a woman. She has been transitioning since, I think, early 2021. She found her true name, Rhea, in early 2021. And so Northern Lights was written in the period of time in 2020, right before she realized who she was, and right before she realized that in order to survive, she needed to transition and she needed to embrace who she truly was. And so before that happened, she was in a very, very dark place. She felt hopeless. She felt like she couldn't tell her truth to the world. She felt like she couldn't live as the person she truly was. And, you know, I think she on some level was afraid of who she really was, because she'd been taught to be afraid of who she really was. And I didn't understand what was going on, because I think not even she knew at that time that she was trans. I didn't know. But I could see that she was suffering, and I could see that it seemed like there was something divine inside of her that she was trying to do away with. It's like she was trying to kill something divine inside of her. And I wrote a lot of songs about that, but the one that ended up sticking was Northern Lights, in which I compare her to Northern Lights. You know, her brightness, her beauty, her brilliance and loveliness is undeniable. And to see her hide it from the world was so painful to me. I was worried that she would drown in her sorrow. I was worried that she wouldn't make it, to be honest. And I played her that song during a night when she was kind of having a tough time, and it was the first time she'd cried in a really long time. And she said, "Wow, I don't feel numb right now." And so I think it became a song that's precious to both of us, because it represents our love for each other and our love for the person she really is. So I was really scared to release it, actually, because it's so vulnerable. But I thought, you know, and I talked to her about this, I thought, you know, maybe if this can, you know, be a representation of love for everyone who's afraid of who they are or who's trying to hide who they are, if it can, you know, come as a voice of compassion to anyone out there, then it's worth it. So, yeah, that's been the inspiration for Northern Lights.
Wow, that's a great story. And I think that's very relatable for a lot of us who are trans or non-binary or just LGBT in general. But being in the closet can be a very dark place. So that's very inspiring to hear that. Is there anything else you'd like to tell us about the song or the lyrics?
Sure. Let's see. It took me a long time to write. I kind of wrote it in drips and drabs. I came back to it many, many times. I think there is present in the song is my sadness in watching her go through this. And I was thinking to myself, as a person who's cisgender, I'm not trans. I haven't gone through that experience. So my experience of loving someone who's experiencing this is, you know, is very different from their experience. And, you know, obviously it was really hard for me to watch Rhea suffer, but it was even harder for her. And so, you know, our experiences were very different. And I wanted to write a song that could be relatable to people who are on the outside watching a loved one going through a tough time, but also a song for that person going through a tough time. So it's, you know, it's for partners of people and for people themselves who are just trying to find their true self and find the courage to show it to the world.
So I have a question. By the way, thank you so much for sharing the story. It takes a lot of courage to be able to tell a story like that, let alone to make art about it. And I just want to tell you also that I'm very much in sympathy with almost everything that you've shared so far. I lived in Nashville for 15 years. You know, when I first lived in Nashville, it was when Katie Lang was first kind of coming of age as a star. And it was so exciting at that time when Katie Lang came to Nashville, when she produced Ingenue, because it was something that we had never really seen before. I mean, it was this really amazing, like, bringing queerness like to country music. I mean, there's always been queerness in country music, even though it's not really recognized, but like bringing it to the musical genre was just really great. And so I just want to, like, you know, tell you as a fellow traveler that it's really nice hearing someone who's has some queer roots, like, exploring that genre of music. Anyways, but what I wanted to ask you about was, you know, a lot of couples when they have a spouse in transition, it's kind of a challenge for them. Like, and I'm just wondering, like, how did you, like, first of all, like, was it a challenge for you? Like, when both of you, like, had this discussion and your partner, like, wanted to let you know that she was transitioning, and how did you all deal with it?
Oh boy. Thank you for asking me that. It's an emotional question. Honestly, I can feel my heart in my chest right now just thinking about it. To be honest, the struggle for me was entirely before she transitioned because of how much pain she was in. I certainly would never take credit for it, but I think I started to get the sense that she might, in fact, identify as a woman before she wanted to say that out loud. And I really tried to be careful not to push her toward anything, but I found myself feeling very open to that possibility. And so as she slowly figured out what her truth was, as she slowly thought about her identity and, you know, combed back through painful past memories and thought about how she wanted to express herself, what it is to identify as anything, you know, the central question of who we are, I kind of started to see who she was. And by the time that she even said out loud to herself, "I'm a woman," in a quiet whisper in our bedroom for no one else to hear, I kind of knew it. I was like, yeah, you know, that makes sense. I believe you. I believe you. And I was so happy to hear her say that. There are few happier moments in my life, in fact, than the moment that we came home from shopping at Goodwill and she tried on her first dress, which is this beautiful zip up in the back blue dress. She put it on and she twirled across the living room floor with this big smile on her face, and I will never forget that. So no, it has not been hard for me at all to see this. What was hard was the years that she was in pain. I'm just so happy she's alive now. She's here. She made it. Yeah, my joy is pretty uncontainable at this point.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is all great. So now that your wife is transitioning, what's it been like helping her through the transition?
I mean, I've done what I can, I suppose, but she's really been a champion. I mean, I feel like I've learned from watching her, you know, because she's, now that she's living out loud as who she is, she can no longer hide behind the sort of cis male privilege that was imposed on her from childhood, obviously. And so, you know, she's getting used to being interrupted. She's getting used to, you know, being treated as a woman, but she's also getting used to being treated as a trans woman, which in even a relatively progressive society is still hard right now. We have a long way to go. And so her resilience is really inspiring. And I think I've learned a lot. I've definitely learned a lot about how to be more trauma-informed. I've learned that, you know, what she's going through is something that is not really comparable to something I've gone through. Although, like, there have been all kinds of parallels, but there have been times when I've had to realize, you know, I don't know what this feels like, but I love you, and I'm just gonna be a hand on your shoulder and accept that I can't make you feel better right now. All I can do is be here. All I can do is tell you I love you, tell you you're a wonderful human being and that you deserve to exist. You know, and so I think I've just tried to be kind of a shoulder on her back, a hand on her back, a shoulder to cry on, and to have fun with her. You know, like, you know, there's been the fun parts too. There's been bra shopping for the first time. There's been dress shopping. There's been, you know, her saying, hey, Sienna, how do you, you know, how do you put on this top? It's confusing. And it's like, I'm like, all this cis woman knowledge was handed to me without me necessarily wanting it. It's nice to actually be able to share it with someone who wants to know, who is very intentionally engaging in femininity. So there's been a lot of joy. There's been a lot of tears. But, you know, she is very resilient and very courageous.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm relating to your story a lot as a fellow AFEB person who also has a trans wife that just started transitioning within the past year or two. Mm. You know, I understand a lot of what you're going through. So before we move on, is there anything else you'd like to tell us about your wife or your relationship with her?
Oh, thank you. Well, let's see. She just played a concert in Pendleton, Oregon. She is a violist and violinist, and we sometimes play music together, and which is really wonderful. It's wonderful to have a very musical partner. And one of the greatest joys right now is that she has started doing writing exercises with me at night. So I'm really excited. She might be writing her first song soon. And I know that she will have really interesting things to say. So I'm excited for that. And in the meantime, while I'm kind of pursuing my career, figuring out what's next for me as a singer-songwriter, I'm always asking her, hey, Rhea, I have a new song. Can you listen to it? Can you tell me? And she's always encouraging me, like, Sienna, be your own judge. Like, you tell your own truth. And so as it's almost like she's, you know, she's learned so much, and she's passing a lot of that wisdom on to me just as a musician. So and as a human being. So we're really happy right now. We're doing a lot of music, and I can't wait to see her when she gets home pretty soon.
Great. Yeah. Well, I hope that if Rhea does, you know, come into her music career, we can have her on the show too sometime. It'd be great.
She would love to hear that. I'll let her know.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Emma with Transpositive. We're just taking a little break. It's really important to me to support KBOO because KBOO is a source of non-corporate radio. It's a place where programmers who don't necessarily fit into the corporate model are able to find a voice. So if you can, please give to KBOO today. You can give by going to kboo.fm/give, or you can text KBOO to 44321. Thanks so much.
So what is next for you? Is there anything you're working on now?
Yeah, I'm currently just trying to write a lot of songs to possibly come out with an album in the next year. We'll see. Over the course of the pandemic, I set up my own home studio, which was a really empowering move. Back in 2021, around a year ago, I released a 6-song EP called Isolation, based on living in the time of COVID and my experiences with it. And I was really honored when one of the songs on that EP got some really positive attention. A couple people said some really nice things about it. And I was encouraged to enter it in a couple of song contests. One was the Great River Folk Festival Song Contest in Wisconsin, and the other was the Portland Folk Festival Song Contest here in Portland. And to my surprise and great joy, the song Dear Northland won both contests. And that was really encouraging. I've never won a song contest before. And so I thought, well, I can't be that bad at music. So I think as musicians, we discourage ourselves a lot, you know. And I've, you know, there's, I don't know, as a person who, especially as a country musician, I definitely don't always see myself represented in country music as a queer, part Latina, and also city-born woman. Like, there's a lot of things about me that don't necessarily seem like mainstream country, but I always go back to that quote by Charlie Pride, who said, you know, something along the lines of country music is big enough for everyone. And I thought, you know what, that's fantastic. And just like you were saying, Emma, you know, Katie Lang and Mary Gaucher and a lot of wonderful queer country musicians have paved so many incredible paths. So
yeah, and Katie Lang lives in Portland now.
What? I did not know that.
Yeah, moved to Portland and like was producing some really good music before the pandemic. Really good stuff.
Oh wow. Yeah, that's fantastic. I would love to check out their most recent work. I got introduced to them as a kid when I was kind of a budding little questioning queer kid. And yeah, and I was like, oh wow, this is so cool.
Oh, how inspiring. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, that is really cool. I love Katie Lang as well. I'm not even normally a country music fan, but Katie Lang is great. So yeah, you know, we should totally collaborate together, and maybe someday we'll collaborate with Katie Lang. That would be great. Yeah. So Emma, is there anything else you wanted to ask before we wrap things up?
No, this has been so refreshing. Thank you so much for sharing your story, and I'm just so excited to share your new song Northern Lights with our audience.
Thank you. Yeah. I really appreciate both of you and this show, so thank you so much for having me on. I'm really honored.
Yeah, so we'll be playing your song right after this, but first, how can people get in touch with you or find your music?
Oh, great question. I have a website. It's siennachristie.com, and that would be spelled siennachristie.com. Some people think my first name, Sienna, starts with a C. Some people think it has two N's. No, it's just S-I-E-N-A. But if you Google Sienna Christie, you should be able to find everything. I have a Bandcamp, I have an Instagram, I have a Facebook page, I have a website, so hopefully I shouldn't be too hard to find.
Great, thank you. So would you like to introduce your song and we'll play it?
Absolutely. So this song, Northern Lights, is my most recent single. I wrote it for my partner of 11 years, Rhea, and it was recorded right here in Portland at Black Diamond Studios, with special thanks to Andy Shardle for helping me produce it. I played the grand piano and sang, and that's it. That's just me and piano singing this song, so I really hope you enjoy it.
Our friends were asking where you'd gone last night. I explained to them that you're the Northern Lights. You were staring glass-eyed at a screen, saying you want to disappear for good sometimes. I sat beside you at the edge of our bed. The skin below your eyes was red. And I touched your face, but you shook your head. I'm not the one you love, you said. But didn't you take my breath away as I followed you through the park? Didn't your fingers touch my hand in the crackling dark? You are lost, but we will meet again. We will meet again. I saw you dance like fire across my sky. We will meet again. We will meet again. My northern love. The same direction each night. Ignore the ghosts making love on the kitchen floor. I still recall your shifting shape, pushing back against the stars as we lay in the embrace of spiral arms. I am cold. You are lost. keeps me company in the darkness as I lie awake and miss you from the other side of the mattress. Still I know this night is colder out where you are than where I am. I hope you don't mind if your fingers touch my hand, 'cause I am cold and you are lost. But we will meet again, we will meet again. I saw you dance like fire across my sky. We will meet again, we will meet again. I am cold, you are lost. But we will meet again, we will meet again. I saw you dance like fire across my sky. We will meet again, oh, we will meet again. My northern lights, my northern lights, my northern lights.
Okay, and that was Northern Lights by Sienna Christie. We've been interviewing Sienna on our show tonight, and it was great to have them. Thank you for listening to Transpositive. Have a good night, everyone.
Thank you, Sienna.
Thank you.
Oh, hey, Nicolette, do that one more time, but before you close out the show,
you cut out. Emma, you there?
Ask Sienna one more time to give their contact information.
Oh, okay. Where should I start from? Okay, we'll just pretend like this is where we just ended the song. Okay.
Yeah.
And that was Northern Lights by Sienna Christie. We've been interviewing Sienna tonight, and they've been sharing their story and their music with us. Thank you so much for being here, Sienna. Can you give us your contact information one more time?
Absolutely. My name is Sienna Christie, SienaChristie. And my music is accessible through my website, siennachristie.com. I have a Bandcamp, I have an Instagram, a Facebook, and so on and so on. So I should be easy to find if you just Google me. And I'm always happy to chat and meet new people. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Good evening. You're listening to Transpositive. We're going to be talking with Sheila Mangert about current events, especially about all of the anti-trans legislation and the war in Ukraine and the targeting of trans women by the Russians. So let's start talking about current events. Sheila, welcome to Transpositive.
Hi, Emma. How are you?
Good. You're pretty much a regular, almost a regular co-host now of the show, Sheila, because we've been talking so much the last few weeks. I mean, it seems like we can't stop talking about what's going on with transgendered issues in the news.
Exactly. Well, it seems like from the days of invisibility, suddenly we're seen everywhere. And as I've mentioned before, suddenly we're seen as what used to be a personal issue and a personal medical issue is now being treated as a cultural and a political issue involving people directly, whereas before it was between us and our own transition process. And now it's being seen in this wider context that casts us as a threat to civilization. And it's amazing that this in various nationalist right-wing narratives is becoming It would be a point of unity if it wasn't that each of these countries is also looking at the opposing political bloc as being the enemy, and then somehow we're seen as the catalyst for cultural decline, and whoever can be cruelest to their transgender people gets to win the culture war, as saying we're the most virile, we're the most traditional, and we're the strongest, and therefore we're most moral, and we're the most destined to rule.
Well, let's talk about what's going on first here in the States, because this backlash, especially targeting transgender youth, just doesn't seem to be stopping. I mean, it started with Texas, mm-hmm. I think. It started way before Texas, but just like so many other, you know, terrible things about this country, they all seem to start in Texas. And what's the most recent things that have happened with transgender youth being targeted by state governments, Sheila?
Well, state after state, and with varying degrees of success and at various steps in the process, it has to first emerge out of a committee that looks at the legislation. Then it has to hit the House floor and the Senate floor, and then it has to be signed by the governor. So the states that are at least looking at these things, and some have achieved it, some have not yet, are Florida, Texas, Arizona, Idaho, but as many as many states have at least petitions along these areas, and of course they always tend to follow the same guidelines. One is to equate transition, particularly hormone blockers in trans youth, as being child abuse, even if it's the parents that are seeking the aid. Then secondarily, to see it as an athletics issue, that F2M trans people are becoming a threat to, quote, women's sports, and therefore are, in a sense, there's the assumption that that the cart is leading the horse. In other words, that the reason that people are becoming transgender is either to get into a girl's locker room or to predominate in a sport that they would do very well if they were competing in their assigned gender. And then a third area that these bills address is the idea that elementary school children are inappropriately age being targeted for transgender ideology that will cause them to question their own sex rather than make room for a transgender child who might just by chance be in their classroom. But if you can't even mention that or deal with the issue, how are you going to say, please be kind to this child who has a special issue and we want you to be understanding? I don't know anybody who is relativizing sex and gender in the first, second, third grades, and that was one of the states said that this cannot be brought up in the first three grades. Well, number one, it probably isn't unless they happen to have a transgender kid classmate. So it's a red herring. It's basically there to imply that the gender community of older trans people are trying to infiltrate our schools, indoctrinate our children, and then as a result undermine their normal sexual security and peace in their own gender. And anyone who's ever been transgender knows that these feelings start when we're very young. And if anything, what we have is we have lack of mirroring, we have lack of visibility. And if we are made visible, that's just to give us living space. It certainly isn't to try to convert our classmates. That just doesn't happen. So it's a phony narrative, but it has great appeal to very ignorant people who refuse to spend 15 minutes on Wikipedia or anything else educating themselves on what's really at stake.
Hi, this is Emma from Transpositive. We're just taking a little break in the show today to remind you that KBOO is a great radio station, and 80% of our funding comes from our members. We're 52 years old, and we're one of the oldest community radio stations in the country. KBOO is a real gem, and if you'd like to give to KBOO, just go to kboo.fm/give. We're community funded, so we need your help to get there. If you can, go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Thanks so much.
So, should we go to Putin?
Well, let's start. Actually, let's stay on the states for just a minute. I'd like to start by talking about Alabama. On Friday, April 8th, the governor of Alabama, according to the Manchester Guardian, signed in two laws that criminalize healthcare providers who offer gender-affirming care to transgender youth. And another law requires students to use bathrooms that match the gender on their birth certificates. It makes it a felony punishable by up to 10 years in prison to provide medical care, including hormone treatment and puberty blockers to minors. And it also includes bans on gender-affirming surgery, and it requires schools to disclose to a parent or a guardian that the minor's perception of their gender or sex is inconsistent with their sex. Do you have any comments on that, Sheila?
Well, that's certainly a wraparound bill that's far more excessive than most of the others, and they've obviously left nothing out. And the fact that they're talking about 10 years of imprisonment shows the degree of hysteria that is being brought to bear on an issue that is extremely rare, extremely private, and very much confined within the family. And this business of outing a transgender child to a possibly abusive household is an invitation to more transgender suicides, and if nothing else, to anti-trans brutality towards children. And the fact that they mask all of that under the guise of we're protecting the children from so-called abusive parents that are pushing their gender onto their child rather than the other way around shows, number one, once again, how ignorant they are. Number two, how unempathetic they are. Number three, how callous it is to use children and to use a hysterical response like this simply for whatever political advantage it might bring forth. But this leads the way into anything that's going on with Russia. This is a worldwide phenomenon, and it's based really upon something in human nature that we see again and again and again. You can see it in the witchcraft trials back in the Middle Ages, but in the 1500s and the 1600s. You can see it in the anti-communist hysteria that took place in the 1950s here in America. You can see it in the racial hysteria that led to the Ku Klux Klan. And there's something in human nature at play here. It's more than just a temporary situation, but it's a resurgence of something very dark and atavistic that is in human nature itself, but it needs to be resisted whenever it raises its ugly head, because it has a trail of bodies and human suffering behind it.
Well, so you were just talking about Russia and how this is, worldwide. I mean, it's not just confined to the South or to the United States. Let's talk about what's going on in Ukraine. There's been reports. There was a story that you sent me recently, Sheila, that talked about specifically targeting trans women, Russian troops specifically targeting trans women, and reports of trans women basically disappearing in Ukraine. Can you talk about that a little bit more?
Yes, I think that's very, very important, because the whole justification for this war was, first of all, what he called the denazification of Ukraine. And he also called it the prevention of genocide in Donbas, the area that is in the east and borders Russia. Well, there's been no evidence whatsoever of actual genocide. There's been a slight civil war going on in that area, but there has been no systematic effort to kill civilians. That just isn't there. So what is he really talking about? When he speaks of genocide, he's using a metaphorical term. He's saying that the presence of Western values undermines the Russian character of that region of the Donbas and is an implicit threat to Russia as a whole. And what is that characteristic? How is he characterizing, quote, Western values? And he would say Western values are materialist, consumerist, gay-oriented, and very much transgender-oriented, and undermines the morale and the traditional values that constitute the identity of the Russian soul. So that's what he really means, is a kind of a cultural genocide. And he's presuming that by joining NATO, or by simply embracing Western protection, or recognizing more human rights freedoms, that somehow or other, that alone is a threat to Russia and justifies not only invading Ukraine, but killing as many Ukrainians as possible in a sort of an effort to purify the country so that Russia can re-civilize it with traditional holy Russian values. And that's what's going on. And this has been going on within Russia for some time. What they call traditional Russian values are also anti-feminist, because they consider feminism also as being non-fertile, therefore somehow undermining Russian productivity. Their population, considering their land area, is very small. So the idea is that in Russia, what they want is very much a traditional concept of procreative families that are having many babies. And of course, there's nothing wrong with babies. I don't want to ever blame fecundity or having life. That's always a blessing. But when it's politicized that somehow or other the primary function of being a woman is simply to be a channel for as many babies as possible, because Hitler did the same thing. It was like, the more babies we have, the more good Nazi soldiers we have. Well, that's inverting the value of life. That's saying that life is valuable because it can make a nation stronger. That's not what it is. But what happens with these strange ideologies is that they assume that life exists primarily to serve the state. And so it's actually an inversion of true cultural values. But Putin considers himself like this great pater familias, that somehow or other he is the father of the nation. He's protecting the virility of Russian manhood, and therefore that Russian troops will be invincible. And this Z that he's put across all of his vehicles going into Ukraine is a symbol for exactly that. It's clear he's waging a cultural war and using the culture as a justification for the brutality that he's visiting on all Ukrainians, men, women, and children, which shows how fallacious his entire narrative is.
So, Sheila, there was one more thing I wanted to talk about with regard to what's going on in Russia. I don't know if it was the article that you forwarded me or if I read it somewhere else when I was reading coverage about Ukraine, but it was basically a war strategist and an economic investor, basically kind of going into detail about why Putin is doing what he's doing. And basically he was making the connection between the lack of democracy and the increasing escalation of Putin's war actions. 2012 was the last time there had been an election in Russia, and it was a completely illegal election that didn't meet any standards of a democratic process. But even since that time, Putin's popularity in Russia has just gone on a rapid decline, and a lot of thinkers feel that the reason that Putin's doing this is to prop up his power within the state. You know, it's basically he has to do something really horrible and something very violent that like kind of gets the population in Russia kind of whipped up and supporting him. So I don't know. What do you think about that idea?
Well, what's going on here is that once again, something that we're seeing not just in Russia, but we're seeing it in Bolsonaro's regime in Brazil and the resistance to the indigenous rights movement down there, because indigenous rights are by definition not subservient to the single authority of the paterfamilias, the person who is in charge. And whether it's Bolsonaro or whether it's Trump or whether it is the governor of Texas, whether it's the governor of Florida, or whether it's the governor of Alabama, whether it's Putin, all of these people are manifesting what we would call right-wing authoritarianism. And in right-wing authoritarianism, the function of the individual is to serve the power of the regime, whatever it happens to be. And it tends to clothe itself in the idea that the individual must be sacrificed for the greater good of the larger entity. And so in Russia, the larger entity is the Russian people, but not conceived as individual people, not considering the quality of their actual lives, because obviously he has many oligarchs that are getting the majority of the benefits of his current regime. But what it's about is setting up a fictitious role of what it feels are values, and then sacrificing the individual good towards achieving that. And notice how, where the values come from. The values do not come from individual choice and diversity or research or any sort of evolution. They're always based upon a mythical past when, quote, everything worked out perfectly. And that's what happens when we talk about make America great again. Here with Putin, restore the borders of the former Soviet Union. For Bolsonaro, it's emerge out of the jungle, cut the rainforest down, become a world player economically. When you slash down the rainforests and use them for farming for a while for the giant ranches that again are owned by a very small minority of people, then what happens is the indigenous people that want to preserve their close ties with the soil, they have to be moved. And they have to be driven back into the jungle as far as they can, because the more that they back up, the more room we have for growing soybeans or raising cattle, even if that's not what the land was actually meant for, and even if it basically threatens the entire planet. So what's really intriguing is that something that seems so personal to us as trans people suddenly achieves the same significance for the world as the struggle of indigenous tribes in the rainforest, as the struggle of people in Ukraine to just have borders around their country that's existed since the 1990s and is now being questioned by an invasive force from Russia. And so instead of being private, the irony is that trans people are suddenly front and center. We have had this burden placed upon our shoulders to be in the vanguard of social awareness and confronting what it means to be human. And we're not trying to export our feelings. In point of fact, oftentimes we go through a lot of suffering, but what's going on instead is we're seen as being all powerful and predatory and threatening, and that's just the opposite of what's actually occurring. And the fact that we can be used like this is an awakening call to other people to say, what happens to trans people today can happen to anyone else tomorrow. What happens to Ukraine today can happen to Poland tomorrow. What happens to anything anywhere in the world involves everybody else. And so this puts us in a position to speak up and to also be able to stand by each other in this critical time and endure it, because history has forced this particular role upon us. But we're not alone, because this same threat is emerging in multiple forms, whether it's with indigenous people or religious minorities or with our with us as sexual minorities.
So you've been listening tonight to Sheila Mengert as we talk about foreign policy and what's going on with transgender people both in Ukraine and Russia, as well as here at home in the United States. It's kind of bleak looking, but there must be a silver lining. Do you see a silver lining in there, Sheila?
Yes, I think there's always a silver lining when you're in a position to influence social change, and the people that we tend to look up to as heroes and heroines are people that have been forced to deal with unfortunate circumstances. It's not fun. Most of us would like to avoid being put in that position, but sometimes fate has that call for us, and it gives our own lives significance when we stand up and when we find unity with one another and realize that, in point of fact, the sheer effort to isolate us and to marginalize us is also our chance to connect first with each other and then with our own sense of self and our own sense of our own destiny. And then hopefully that will make us more empathetic. And as different oppressed groups reach out to other oppressed groups, this is how human civilization progresses over time. And it's a wonderful thing to be part of that. And we must never lose hope when we're confronted with these challenges.
Well, thanks so much, Sheila. Thanks for joining us tonight on Trans Positive. Sheila, if people want to find out more about you or about your writings, is there a website where they can go to learn about your writings?
Yes, there is. My short stories have recently come out through Blue Forge Press. And it's on Amazon, and it's called Auguries of Desolation. And the purpose of the book is to deal with various stories that of an augury is something that foretells the future. And of course, everyone knows what desolation is. It's a feeling of dark times. So it was meant to be a warning that says we're entering a very troubled period in history, and is told through the stories of the people in the short stories. And it also has a little narrative section that explains my philosophy of writing and the forces that influenced me as a writer. And it's my solo volume, and it's part of what has been called the Trinity series that included several other writers but we were allowed to do a solo volume of just our own stories, and it has 13 short stories combined with a answer to about 9 major questions that was actually tremendously fun because it let me put my whole philosophy of writing together. So just look up for Auguries of Desolation on Amazon.com.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Sheila. Everyone, thank you for joining us tonight here on Transpositive.
Hi, this is Emma. Thanks so much for listening to our episode of Transpositive today. KBOO is a radio station that really gives voice to folks who don't necessarily fit into normal corporate radio. And we're a radio station that really tries to open our doors to everyone. So if you really value KBOO, and if you value what you hear on KBOO every day, if you would please consider going to kboo.fm/give and click donate in the mobile app, or text KBOO to 44321. Lastly, you can mail a check to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. Thanks so much and have a great evening.
Transgender people don't live here.
I've never met anyone who's transgender.
I swear I don't know someone who's transgender.
Transgender and non-binary people like me hear this all the time. But according to the HRC Foundation, there are more than 2 million transgender people in the United States.
We live in every community across this country.
You might be surprised to hear that there are more transgender and non-binary people in the United States than there are
Starbucks, McDonald's, and Walmart locations combined.
In fact, if you put us all together,
there'd be more non-binary and transgender folks than the populations of DC,
or Nebraska,
or Maine,
or Idaho,
or West Virginia.
As a matter of fact, 15 states have a lower population than the amount of trans folks in the US.
So here are a few things to keep in mind.
You don't always know when a person is trans.
But we're your neighbors,
your coworkers,
your students,
your customers,
and even your friends and family.
We exist in every culture, todas las culturas, throughout human history.
And while we're more visible than ever before,
sometimes you just don't see us.
So when you hear about politicians pushing for discriminatory bills,
know this, these bills address problems that aren't even real.
Problems that don't actually exist.
But we do.
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 And we need your support.
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community